Joining us this morning, we have Dr. Tadeo Diaz-Balderrama, who is with SSM Health, and in particular, the Fond du Lac Regional Clinic. He is Chief of Cardiovascular Services. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. Good. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. As you put it, every time, who was it that comes out with a press release, we get to talk to you?
The American Heart Association.
The American Heart Association, okay. Now, this one has to do with heart disease and strokes declining, but still a top cause of death. Where would you like to start off our conversation?
So I think with exactly where you started, right? This new report by the American Heart Association showed that heart disease and stroke deaths decreased from 2022 to 2023. By about 30,000 deaths, which is great because we saw an increase in the death rate of heart disease and stroke after COVID. That was after a decline, COVID pandemic hit, and we saw a rise in these deaths. So it is great that we're finally getting to a point where we're starting to make enough of an impact to help decrease these significant causes of death. Really, when you look at heart disease being the number one cause of death, stroke being the number four cause of death, if you combine both of them, they account for 1 in 4 deaths in the U.S. And that's more than if you combine the second and the third causes of death, which are cancer and accidents. So still a very important cause of death that we need to continue to work hard to reduce. But it's good news that we're starting to make an impact.
All right. So how do we work hard to reduce that then?
Well, I think it's the same thing that I would say that we've talked about before, right? We've seen a rise in the prevalence or in the presence of high blood pressure among patients, diabetes and obesity. So the American Heart Association introduced what they call the Essential Eight, which are eight metrics that patients can work on to help reduce their chances of heart disease. The reason for introducing this is because as much as 80% of heart disease and stroke is preventable with lifestyle changes. And they identified that eating better, being more active, quitting tobacco, getting healthier sleep, managing weight, controlling cholesterol, managing blood sugar, and managing blood pressure can reduce chances of dying in patients by as much as 74%, dying from cardiovascular disease, obviously. If all of those eight metrics are optimal, it can reduce the chances of dying by about 40%, or it can reduce the all-cause deaths and cardiovascular-related deaths by 40%.
All right. Just out of curiosity, how important is sleep in factoring all of this in?
Well, it's very important. I think we're identifying that good quality sleep can help reduce chances of high blood pressure and help improve overall well-being and how people feel. I think in general, what we tend to target in medicine are patients who develop what is called obstructive sleep apnea. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with it. That is a disease condition in which the airway obstructs and leads to people waking up when they're trying to get into that deep sleep. To that deep sleep that's the most restorative, at night. So it's important to really target that. It's important to get enough sleep as well. I think a lot of us are maybe burning the candle at both ends and not getting enough sleep, not getting to bed early enough and having to wake up too early, or, just not really working on our sleep hygiene, doing things like, making sure that that their bedroom is dark, that the TV is not on, that they're winding down before going to bed so that they're not sitting in their bed tossing and turning.
Okay. Well, a few times I've been asked about doing a sleep study. What's involved in a sleep study?
So a sleep study is really a test that is meant to identify sleep apnea, or periods of time in which you stop breathing. They're called apnea events. There's many different types of sleep apnea, and so the term sleep study is fairly broad. And the type of sleep study that is done really depends on kind of the initial suspicion that your doctor may have. So they may do a sleep study that's a single channel, meaning a single piece of information, that is being recorded throughout your sleep, or they may do more complex sleep studies that go up to 12 channels. They have 12 pieces of information that's monitored throughout the night. And with that information, they can help decide whether or not, you know, you stop breathing enough times at night to need therapy.
Okay. And they have different devices to help you out if you have sleep apnea?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the mainstream device is what you call the CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure. That's really, I think, probably what most of your listeners have. There are some new appliances or devices that sit in the mouth that may help. I would really have to defer to a sleep medicine specialist to talk about their effectiveness. But I do encourage your listeners who have had the suspicion that they may have sleep apnea to really consult with their primary doctor or to consult with a sleep medicine specialist.
All right. We only tackled one of the essential eight. What are a couple others that you'd like to hit?
So I think the idea of being more active, I think, is very important. When you really look at the physical activity target, which is about 2.5 hours of moderate intensity activity a week, only 1 in 4 U.S. adults meet that guideline. I think a more worrisome one is that kids age 6 to 17, only 1 in 5 are active more than 60 minutes a day, which is really the recommended activity target for children. So unfortunately, that has its own problems because we tend to, you know, have increased weight and increased time without being physically active means usually, you know, consuming more calories. So I think that's a very reasonable target for people to try to hit. Obviously managing cholesterol, blood sugar, and blood pressure, that's really a coordinated effort with your primary care provider. And then managing weight, obviously that's a more challenging one. But I think that one, we have some, you know, I'm sure your listeners are well aware of some of the new medications that are available that can really, that have made a significant impact in weight reduction for patients.
Okay. We hear about 10,000 steps. Is that really good?
Well, you know, the number 10,000 really came, it's kind of vague as to exactly where it came from. I will say that not every step is the same. So if we're going to say 10,000 steps, they should be quality, purposeful physical activity steps. I think, you know, I could argue that, well, maybe I don't need to exercise because I walk 10,000 steps at work. But you really have to ask yourself, was that purposeful, moderate intensity activity? And what moderate intensity activity is any activity where you can have a conversation but have to pause to take a breath. But you cannot sing during the activity. That means that you're working hard enough to get the cardiovascular benefit, but you're not working light enough that it's leisure and it doesn't really count towards that 2.5 hours of moderate intensity activity a week. So, you know, there's plenty of people out there that are walking a lot at their work, you know, and maybe at a more leisure pace. Should those 10,000 steps count? Well, I'd argue that any activity is good activity, but I think we still need to really work at improving our degree, our level of moderate intensity activity. I think we have to make it a purpose, you know, whether it's a daily walk after dinner, brisk walk. I have some patients that when the weather is bad, they either walk up and down their steps in their house or they go to a large big box store earlier in the morning so they can walk some laps. There's multiple ways that we can get that level of activity without having to pay for expensive gyms or, you know, drive long distances.
Yeah, you used to have a lot of people that did mall walking. I don't know how many malls there are out there anymore, but anyway. Let's talk a little bit about sitting. If you have a pretty sedentary job, what about those desks you get that you have to stand at to work?
Yeah, so standing desks, and now actually they have walking pad desks where you can walk at a low pace while you're working, depending on the type of work that you're doing. I think they have been shown to be better than sitting. You know, obviously, if we're comparing it to sitting alone, really any degree of activity is better than sitting. So if you have the flexibility or the opportunity to have a standing desk where you can change positions, stand up, where you can maybe walk around a little bit, I think that's a good option to have. it does not replace the moderate intensity activity. I think we should be, you know, I do want to say that, but I think if your work allows it, or if you have the flexibility to even just, you know, get up and walk periodically throughout your day, I think it's a better strategy than just accepting to sit down in front of a computer or in front of a screen for prolonged periods of time.
Used to know a Fond du Lac County judge. He's retired now, but he would go next door to the Y during lunch hour and do a workout. That's how he kept fit.
Yeah. I think that's I think that's an excellent strategy. I can tell you one of our primary care physicians here does the same. He's an avid biker, avid cross-country skier, swimmer. And during the lunch hour, you can't find him in his office. He's usually at the Y or biking or doing something. And you got to take every opportunity. You can't wait for those opportunities to present themselves. If we say, and I can tell you that, you know, life gets busy. And so sometimes you can't say, I'm going to go to the gym at 3 after work, because life will happen. And you, so you have to just take any opportunity you can to be physically active and invest in your health, because it pays dividends as you get older.
Dr. Baldaramas, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Bob. You have a good day.
You too. That is Dr. Tadeo Diaz of Baldarama of SSM Health of Fond du Lac Regional Clinic, Chief of Cardiovascular Services. We appreciate him joining us this morning.